You are listening to The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards with Matthew Chiles and Cindy Paragill.
Standards. Well, they affect all of us every day, wherever we go, whatever we do. By defining good practice, they help people, organisations, the economy and society to do things better.
And every year, standards-making bodies around the world publish thousands of them for all sorts of things. For some of the big stuff that affects all of our lives, like the Net Zero Guidelines, an international standard that helps provide a common reference for governments and industry.
And it's not just the big stuff, it's the small stuff too. There's a standard for pen caps, which reduces the risk of asphyxiation if pen caps are accidentally swallowed by children. Amazing, really.
And then there's everything in between, from standards that help organizations to protect customer data, to guidance on the right way to use AI in medical devices, even to the cables that charge our smartphones.
In fact, for you to be able to listen to our voices right now, you may be using Wi-Fi. Well, that's all down to the IEEE 802 series, International Standards.
And standards like these are made by standards makers, tens of thousands of people from around the world who get together to agree good practice to the way things are made and done, all helping to make our lives easier, safer, and more enjoyable.
Hello, this is Matthew Chiles, and this episode of The Standards Show is my conversation with one of those standards makers, an award-winning one in fact, Dr. Victoria Hirth. Working in the field of sustainability for more than 20 years, Victoria describes herself as an independent pracademic, working for a world where organisations flourish by serving the long-term well-being for all. Amongst her standards development work, she played a key role in the development of ISO 37000, the international standard for governance of organisations. I spoke to Victoria about why she is a standards maker, the impact it's had on her career, and also about her proudest standards making moments. But I started by asking Victoria about her standards journey.
Well, I've been involved with standards building for, I suppose more than 15 years now, maybe even more than that. It started out focusing on sustainable communities. I helped put together the case for a British standard in sustainable communities that then rolled up into an international work that was being done on sustainable communities, but also sustainable city indicators, smart city indicators, et cetera, et cetera. So my first international standards role was as UK lead expert for the committee creating a standard on sustainable city indicators. So that was 100 indicators that would sort of help bypass the fragmented and sort of fairly cowboy reality of lots of people trying to rank cities against various indicators and cities running around trying to measure 5 million things and it not necessarily being structured around the right things, etc., etc. So all the good stuff that standards are great for. And when I took a breath after we'd done that first standard, it started to move into, say, smart cities. And at that point, I thought, you know, this is all great work and I see the huge value in it. However, my area is organizational decision making. And that's the bit that's where I have a really important role to play, I felt. So I asked what standards were being developed in that particular area. And at that point, there were two. And one was a British standard in social value, and another in governance. And so I got involved with both of those. So I was part of the committee that developed the British standard in social value that was convened by Jeremy Nicholls. And then I also was there at the very beginning when the technical committee for governance was proposed by British Standards Institute, and as part of that, to the proposal to create the world's first multi-stakeholder view on what was governance of organizations. And I ended up not quite sure how, very quickly becoming the convener of that. We then went into a twinning agreement, and myself and my twinning partner, Axel Kravatsky, led that process for 5 years. There were 77 countries, 25 liaisons, and in the end it was approved by all 164 countries at that time. And that's where we ended up 2 years ago with ISO 37000. And then to finish the story, not long after that, British Standards Institute had a proposal. They wanted to create a British standard, in this case a PAS, in purpose-driven organizations. And that's, as I was saying, one of my core focus and specialties. And actually, ISO 37000 puts purpose at the core. So I was the technical author for that. And we're now standing at a juncture where we hope that that will go out soon for global vote as a proposal for BSI to be developed at an international level. And if that happens, then the proposal is that I would lead that standard. So that's the potted history of everything I've had to do with standards.
So in terms of your, obviously you've been on a fantastic standards journey so far. I just wonder, sort of take me back to the beginning, really, about what were your motivations for getting involved in the first place?
I often say that there are some key maturity stages in life which one does or doesn't reach. And one of those key stages is the realization that standardization is totally critical and necessarily slow and tedious. But actually, in terms of creating great change, there's not much else but going forward into standardization. And so there was a point in time where I was introduced to David Jackman, who'd been longstanding in the realm of standards building. And he was presenting the work to potentially create a British standard in sustainable communities. And it was then that I got involved and volunteered in helping him get that proposal through. So that's like technically how it started. But I think my journey going back really to being a teenager, I said it was over 20 years, really it's more like 35, of saying, how do we align organizational decision-making with a sustainable future? I didn't have those words or those terms, but really that's what I was doing. So by the time I met David Jackman, when I was probably late 20s, early 30s, I'm 47 now, by the way, you can tell everyone that, that's fine, is when I really was at a point of being able to recognize that standards were important. And I think that interaction with David Jackman just sort of took me over the edge of really realizing also what the world of standardization looked like in a technical sense. So I would say, what I often summarize these days is that two key things. As I think I said before, if we want a sustainable future, in other words, one where we have long-term well-being for all people and planet, that's also the goal of the economy, ironically. If we want that to happen, we have to have organizational decision-making that makes that happen. We have all of the components to reformulate the market economy in a way that on its own terms delivers what it's set up to do. In other words, collective well-being for the society and et cetera that it serves. But what we don't have, so we have the solutions, we have the energy, the latent energy sitting there, but we don't have the clarity, the unity, and therefore the confidence to move forward at speed. And of those clarity, unity, and confidence, it's the clarity that is the foundation of that. You can't have unity around what, you know, unless you're clear about the thing that you're unifying around. And you can't have confidence to move forward and to perhaps embody in your identity and in what you say and how you show up a new vision of a quite radically different future unless you are really feel A, that you're not alone, and that's where the unity comes in, because normative confidence is so important, and that all rests on clarity. And what standardization does is allow the consensus to be both exposed and built in order to move from circular conversations going round in circles, talking at cross purposes, in order to pin down what you really mean and then move forwards in order to improve that consensus and the level of detail you can get into with clarity.
Now, Victoria, you've talked there about some of the sort of motivations and your interest in getting involved in standards, which, as you described, was quite a long time ago, be sort of informally and then formally involved. I just wonder, I could probably guess the answer to your question, to this question here, but are the motivations the same now? You know, what keeps you involved?
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly the same. Because it's not just, we're not just talking about standardization here. We're talking about standardization within national member bodies, which then roll up to ISO. So when I talk about standardization, I mean, standardization is basically the process of pinning down consensus. And therefore, what we mean by that is clarity about a particular topic. ISO and national standards bodies are, as I describe it, the most highly refined, mature process for consensus building that exists. And when you get to the ISO level, it's not just, so it's a facility for building consensus on any topic in theory. That's its superpower. When you get to ISO level, you have this additional superpower that says you've actually got 167 countries with standards bodies that are in various levels of degrees related to the nation and the government of that nation that are formally engaged in the process of that consensus building. So, as I said before, we will not have a sustainable future unless we're clear, not just about what's holding us back, which is the business as usual market organizing that we've become so used to, we almost think it's just the way it is, and it isn't. If we're going to reformulate to a new market economy, we have to have clarity about what that looks like. What are the behaviors that, and the governance behaviors, the management behaviors, therefore, that will show up in organizations? And so my motivation for being involved in standards building is we are not going to get there unless we have a level of global consensus about that vision, so that we have, therefore, the unity and the confidence to be able to make that happen and to transform, therefore, our existing regulatory, legislative, normative, cultural context for that to become the new reality. So standards building is an absolute linchpin in that system. And I, as a theory of change, I don't see what else is going to be able to move from the status quo and crystallize that new vision in a way that isn't just someone sat in a room saying, I think it should be like this, but the world saying it.
Now, you talked passionately there, Victoria, about sort of positive change and the role that standards play within that. I just wonder from your own personal perspective, the change in your career and your professional development, you know, what has been the impact of being a standards maker? What's it been on your career?
It's really funny, that word career, because I don't really... I've been very purpose-driven since I was young. And so my career is in service of that. So what I don't know what we think of as a career, but, you know, it's I do things because I think that they... My two questions are, will this have positive impact towards well-being for everyone? And that's the foundation of being purpose-driven. And am I uniquely placed to play a role in it? As in, if somebody else could do it, you know, is standing there waiting to do it, could do it just as well, then I'll go and find something else that does need me and does uniquely need me. And so standards building has enabled my impact in other areas to be stronger. So not just the fact that standards building in itself is highly impactful, as I said, and I get involved with it because I feel like it utilizes some of the skills that I have. And therefore I feel like it's worth me showing up, because as we all know, a lot of it is voluntary. So you have to have a very good reason why you want to get involved. And for me, it's the impact. And then the second thing is that there are nice spillover effects. So I will also say yes to doing things, paid or unpaid, if I feel that it will develop me and enable me to be more impactful in the other roles that I do or future roles that are coming through. And standardization, therefore, has that direct impact. But it also, because of the process, because of the nature of what it is, you know, your consensus building. And therefore, it's really fantastic at building negotiation skills, compromising skills, listening skills, empathy skills, international awareness, cultural awareness. And if you take on a convening role, like I did for that, those 5 years with Axel Kravatsky, in what was a very, very challenging standard, because we went from blank sheet to standardizing a foundational concept that had never been standardized in that way before. It took about 18 months to even get it off the ground. There was pushback. We needed to create an ad hoc group to even prove the case. And then we had to build it from scratch in a way that brought as many people into the room as possible. Because if you create a standard in an isolation, that standard will sit on the shelf. And what's the point of that? So that the skills that I had to start with, but that then I developed over those 5 years, I'd say really have been foundational to empowering further the abilities and the impact I can have in other fields.
I love the way, in true standards making style, you were asking me to clarify my term there with career. I love it. Now, in terms of obviously,
which is also very academic thing to do, and that's why, you know. Academia and standards building do go, I think, a little bit hand in hand.
I think you're right, because it's obviously academics play an incredibly important role within our committees. You're absolutely right. And I think defining terms, and obviously we spend a lot of time within the standards world, don't we? Just what do we mean by something? I think that's a really, really important point to make. I just wonder then, given your rich history here in getting involved in standards over a significant amount of time, it's been a very, very important part of your professional life. You know, what have been your proudest standards making moments so far?
Publishing ISO 37000, getting that global sign-off for the final version, and more importantly, feeling like it was a very high quality document that was aligned with a sustainable future. Because when I took on the convening role, when you do that, you lose your expert. So while I was convening, I would sometimes take off my convening hat, put on my expert hat. My primary job was to facilitate the consensus. Obviously, you have to have a level of, or it certainly very much helps if you have a level of technical understanding of the topic in order to be able to ask the right questions, see through the conversations that are being had. But it was by no means a certainty that Ava would have even have produced the standard because of the context I explained, or that it would be something that I would be proud that we had created as a committee, because really that was not my job. It was not, my job was not to help create a standard that I liked. My job was to help the world come to its consensus. The fact that the consensus was what I'd hoped that it might be was just great chance. that's my proudest moment, I would say, yeah.
And how about your award? You're an award-winning standards maker too.
Yes. BSI and ISO gave me an award for the role that I played in that, which was very nice of them. I think it's probably I just, once you reach a certain number of free hours that you've given, maybe it's something that happens. But it's always the case, you know, it's true teamwork. So I never really take any of those awards too much to heart. You know, I had a role to play. And, you know, because it was so important what we were doing, there was no option but to play it to my fullest part. And if I'd have felt that my fullest part and me showing up fully in that role was not doing a quality job, I would have stopped, because it's too important a role. So in a way, it was just, you know, I got my award and reward through the process, because it felt very good to be part of something so important with such an amazing group of experts globally who were so committed to the process.
Now, you talked there about being part of something and about teamwork, and I want to ask you about that, because obviously we can't make great standards without all different sorts of perspectives from all different professional backgrounds and career stages and individuals and organisations, all of that, sitting around the table to agree that consensus. So what advice would you give to anyone really considering getting involved in standards?
I would say go for it. There'll be no loss in getting involved in standards building. I would say the more you do it for the right reasons, the more you'll get out of it. So yes, if you go into it thinking, I'm going to have something to put on my CV, sure, you'll get something to put on your CV. But that's all you'll get, because you won't necessarily be open to the breadth of rewards that you can get from being a standards builder. Certainly the exposure to other cultures is just as a human being interesting. Having to tackle problems and overcome them is hugely rewarding. You have to put in a business plan, inverted commas. You have to get approval to make it happen. And then the clock starts ticking and you have to drive through. So it's rewarding because so many important conversations, as I mentioned earlier, go round in circles and you don't actually move forward. But standards building is one where you are in a team with a very clear objective and a highly refined multi-stakeholder process to support you in that. And so one way or another, you are going to succeed, even if that success is failure, in the sense that you say, you know what, we wanted to standardize this topic, but the consensus just isn't there. To me, that's equal success because we've learned something. So I don't think you can lose. But if you go into it thinking, I would like to make a contribution to helping the world advance towards collective long-term well-being being better, as in that you are doing it in order to make positive impact in the world, I think you will get your greatest rewards, because that really is what standards enable us to do.
Well, thank you, Victoria, for you know, making your contribution and advancing the world, as you say, making the world advance through standards. And thank you for being a standards maker.
Thank you, Matthew.
Now, if like Victoria, you too want to be part of the standards community, having an impact and making a difference by shaping standards for the governance of organisations, or if you want to create smarter transport solutions or make workplaces more diverse and inclusive, or maybe really want to make a difference in the field of medical devices or baby feeding products, or maybe managing food waste, it doesn't matter. Whatever your thing, get involved in standards. We welcome applicants from all fields, backgrounds, and career stages. Our goal is a simple one, to have a balance of views around the table. So start that standards journey now. Details of how to do so are in the show notes. And the show notes are also where you can find details of our socials and all the other ways to get in touch with us here on The Standard Show.
You have been listening to an episode of The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards, with Matthew Childs and Cindy Paragill.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.